Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. Good morning and welcome back to another edition of Happy Hour here on 92.9 WBPM with Jonna Spilbor, Carol Pesci, and myself. I'm Frankenberry. Good morning to all and good morning to you ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning, Frankenberry. And before we get rolling, I have something to say that might make you blush.
Well, we don't have video going, so you won't know and I'll lie.
Jonna has something to say. Go figure.
But I think I will know. And I can't explain why. Now, you have a wonderful voice and a wonderful radio voice. But for some reason this morning, it's wonderful plus extra. Like there's a little extra something sexy about your voice this morning, Frankenberry. What could that be? You taking a new vitamin? Did you shave? What's going on?
Did you stay out late? Do you have dirty stay out voice?
No, I have no dirty stay out voice. And no, there's no new vitamins, though I did shave and I look a little bit better than I did last week when I basically look like I smell like gin and sweat. And I don't know what it could be. Maybe it's just because, I'm sure, well, we'll let the audience know. Last week we ran a repeat. So it's been 2 weeks since you've talked to me. So maybe it's just the miss.
Nope. That's not it. Although we do miss you. I'm going to go with maybe you're wearing a pair of clean sweatpants this morning. Yes or no?
Actually, as a matter of fact, yes, because I did my laundry on Saturday. I split my two pairs of sweatpants, one on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, the other on Tuesday and Thursday. So this is my first Tuesday day of two pairs of sweatpants.
We can hear it in your voice, Frankenberry.
That's it. That's got to be it. You've got clean, sweat, sexy voice.
That's
Jonna,
right.
That's his equivalent of us having a good hair day.
That's right. Me having a comfy lower section is the same as you guys having a good hair day.
Yeah, sounds good on you, Frankenberry.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Well, that's good. And we did miss, you know, from time to time, we need to take a week off for one reason or another. But that's okay because we're back and we're going to be talking with somebody really totally special. We're having a little bit of a different show today. But before we get to some serious stuff, I wanted to share with you guys, I had a little bit of, I think it was a funny experience last week because I decided to, I don't know if you guys might know this, like I've been wanting a second like winter car for probably a year now. I've been kind of looking, which is unlike me because usually when I make up my mind that I want something, I decide quickly and I go get it. But for the past year, I've been researching and looking, and every time Carol gets a new car, then I gotta go research that one, and then and Carol did get a nice car in the past year. But so I've been doing this research, and it's just that, you know, I took such a bath. Like I'm an Audi girl, you guys know, and Carol was an Audi girl too. I love driving Audis. I just think they're great cars. But every time I go to trade in like my old Audi for a new Audi, I end up taking a bath because I guess my payments don't keep up with the lost value. And I'm tired of that. So I said to myself, self, I want a car that I'm not going to cringe every time I have to drive it in the snow or I hit a pothole or a rock hits it or I have to park it in a public garage. I want a car that I'm okay kind of beating up a little bit, and I want to preserve the miles on my Audi so I don't take a bath at some point when I trade it in, which sounds like pretty decent, I don't know, a pretty good idea to me. So my beater car, I decided it was going to be a BMW.
Hey, Jonna, I can see your face.
Jonna, let me stop you right there, okay?
I'm not listening to you, Frankenberry.
Hey,
I'm not listening to
you. You get a Beamer car and you ever call it your beater one more time, I am going to make you the BT.
Oh my God, Frankenberry, I wish I could see your face.
But listen,
BMW,
let me plead my case.
Beater.
Can I just plead my case for a second?
Of course.
My case. As I said.
Wait. Pause, please. Frank and Barry, we haven't done this in a long time. I'm making eye contact with you right now. You ready?
Yep. Jonna's first world problems.
Fine. This is why I miss being in studio with you two. All right. So I did the research, and you know, you can get a used BMW at a really good prices, to be honest with you. And they are good cars in that they mechanically, they're very sound. But for some reason, once you drive them off the lot, they tend to become much, much, much more affordable. So with that in mind, I did a lot of shopping around. And here's the thing. I don't know if you guys have tried this, but especially during this pandemic, you see all the commercials for like car companies that you buy your car completely online, like Carvana and Vroom. Right? You go on just, and I love buying stuff online. I'm an online shopping queen. So I tried that route where, and I got to tell you, I'm not all that thrilled because when you shop for a specific car and you find it, like at first it takes forever to find it, then you find it, then you got to go through this process of like putting down a little down payment, and then boom, somehow somebody comes and buys it out from underneath you. It's strange. So I did that a few times. It never, ever worked. So finally, to make a long story longer, I found the car that I wanted at some dealership way down in Westchester. And sure enough, I'm on my way. I made an appointment to go look at the car and test drive the car. And I'm halfway there when the dealer calls me and says, "Oh, I'm sorry. We just sold that one, but I have another one here for you if you want to look at it." But at that point, I was so mad by the bait and switch that I just turned my little self around and said, "I'm not going to give you my business." Anyway, so I end up finding the similar car like a week later, and I drive to this dealership and I take it for a test drive. And this was the weirdest thing. And they explained it to me before I got in. They said to me, "Look, we just got this car back. It was a, whatever you call it, a lease. And the person who drove it was a smoker, and we haven't actually, you know, gone in and they ionize it or deionize it, whatever it is, to get that smell out." So I get in the car, I take it for a test drive, and it doesn't smell like ciggy butts. It smells like vomit, you know, between them trying to clean it and not right. So now I'm like dying. I go on this test drive, I drive it back, and I said, "There's just no way that I'll never get this smell out of my face. I can't buy this particular car." So the salesperson, who I really like, said, "Well, you know, we have another one that's a little bit more money and a tiny bit bigger, and it's not going to be here for another week, but why don't you come back and take that one for a test drive?" So I take him up on his offer. But this time I go with Mama Nance because it was a weekend and she was bored, and she was there to talk me out of buying this car. That was her job.
Let's go.
We're going to take this car for a test drive. You're going to talk me out of buying it, and then we're just going to go home or go get ice cream or pizza or whatever you want to do. So off we go. We get to the dealership. The car comes out. It's all clean. It's, you know, nobody was smoking in it. Smells great. We get in the car. Well, this car was so freaking comfortable that I'm just driving, and we're talking and driving and talking and driving and talking. And finally, my mother goes, "How many miles does this car have on it?" And I said, "It's got 30,000 miles. And she's like, "Well, we started at 20, so maybe we ought to go back." Guys, I was gone so long on this test drive, because now they don't send the dealers with you. I guess because of COVID, they don't come with. You go by yourself. And I was gone so long that they were calling me. And when I got back to the dealership, they were waiting outside, like ready to call the cops.
Oh, no.
I've never had that happen before. And he said the guy came up and he was nervous, wringing his hands. Like, "I started to get nervous. I called you twice. I never heard the phone." And then, you know, so I felt bad that I made him go through that. And then I thought, what a fantastic premise for a car commercial, right? You get in the car and it's so you, and you're so comfortable, and you feel like it's already yours, that you just keep on driving. And then, you know, ultimately, you put the keys in your purse instead of handing them back to the dealer, and you're like, "I'll take it." Like, that could be a great car commercial.
I love it. I would recommend in that commercial that you do have the cops waiting for you, just because that would be funny.
I almost did. And so then I turned to my mother and I'm like, all right, well, you know, thanks for the test drive. I really, really liked it, but my sidekick here won't let me buy it. And she goes, oh no, it's a great car. It's a great car. You should really get this car. Oh, this was such a comfortable car. I could get it. It was good. So I bought it. And that's the moral of the story.
Moral of the story is don't bring your mother on your test drive.
Yeah, I know. She really liked it, but it was good. But and it's a bigger car. And like I said, my car is very, very sporty.
What model?
It's a 535 iX drive hatchback. Okay. So it's like they call it a sport activity vehicle instead of a sport utility vehicle because it's like just a tad smaller than an SUV.
Hatchback?
But hatchback.
Are you going to start wearing flannel?
Oh, please.
You do realize, Jonna, that that is the closest thing to a family car that you're probably ever going to be in.
Yeah, so no. So it's white.
Nice.
It's white. And you know, and I figured since now I will have room for it, since I have a two-car garage that one day will be finished on my property, that it was a good time to do it. And it's got low miles, and the price was right.
This is what happens when people buy a new home and they think, oh, that's the big expense. And then they realize, no, I got to fill this home. And you made the critical mistake of adding on a two-car garage, which then cost you not only the renovation and addition, but a second car.
Yeah. And all I can say is, you know, at least it isn't a three-car garage. Because
you know what, Jonna? I can see you before buying the second car, if your two-car garage was done, every day coming home and going, that's just not working. I can't just have one in a two-car garage.
Very unbalanced.
Exactly.
Right, so I had to, you see? I had to.
Well, congratulations. So, yeah.
Well, thanks. Like I said, it's a good beater car.
Right. Enough with the beater car, lady. 30,000 miles, and it's probably like an 18. Yeah, beater car.
No, it's older than an 18, so there.
Yeah, what is it? What year is it?
It's a 17.
Okay, I hate you more now.
You know what? I'm going to pick you up and drive you to work one of these days. Well, I didn't get it yet. I'm getting it in a couple days, so.
How's it going in the basement?
I was trying to calculate how long I've been in the basement. And I think I moved in the basement on Columbus Day. So it's getting up there. But the good news is I think I will be moving out of the basement before Christmas.
Yeah?
I'm pretty sure, which will be great. I mean, my dogs will miss me. That's been the funniest part, is that my dogs, who live with my parents, but they're my dogs, are attached to me like barnacles. It is the cutest thing, which I'm loving because, you know, Reese is going to be 14 in a couple weeks and Roxy's going to be 14 in 6 months, you know, so they're getting up there.
Right.
And I'm just loving that I get to spend this time with them, because even though they're going to live to be 30, it's nice that I get this time.
Well, I'm sure they're enjoying the heck out of it, Miss Spielberg.
Yes, yes, they actually are. How's everybody else been? What'd you guys do on our week off? Anything? Same old, same old. How are things at the station? Because, you know, we haven't been to the station since March.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I know. And there hasn't been any clients at all, not even just recording your show, but everything we do now is Zoomed because we're not, you know, nobody's allowed in the building other than us.
Oh,
are you going in
that
every day, Frank and Mary?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that, you know, for me and for my boss, Randy, and for the jocks, for a couple of others, nothing has changed in the way of getting up and going to work every day. So, I mean, I've come in every day the entire time. So, you know, as things sit where they are now, I don't know. There might be another situation where, you know, the sales folks are told to stay home and work from home and you know, we revert back to just me and Randy here in production and the jocks. I'll have to wait, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Can I get your opinions on something? Because I've been thinking about this since, especially like, you know, New York City is not at all the same city with all of its shutdowns and stuff like that. And it's, you know, and even here with restaurants at 50% capacity and all that kind of jazz. Do you think we will ever completely go back to pre-pandemic? Like, for example, we do this show and it's convenient that we get to do it from wherever we are, though I miss being in studio because we have our camaraderie and I would like to get back in studio with you guys. But do you think like this kind of thing where you can work remotely, do you think people will ever go back to their offices 100%, or have we changed, you know, indelibly for, I don't know, better or worse?
I have kind of like a two-part answer to that. I think from a logistical work standpoint, that we're never going to go back to exactly where we were, because I think there was many people, maybe businesses, managers, owners, that feared people not being in the office for being less productive, that have discovered that it actually works. So I think there's going to be a certain amount of people and businesses that are going to continue on, because maybe it saves them on commuting, maybe it saves them on office space rental, I don't know. So from that standpoint, I don't think so. And I also, and I was talking to my husband Craig about this the other day, I'm not sure in general, as a global society, that we are ever going to get back to pre-pandemic. I mean, unless you and they approve a vaccine, it's 100% effective, and you inoculate every single person on the same day, what prevents it from, you know, continuing to go around? And his answer was valid. He goes, well, look at, you know, we pretty much eradicated measles at some point, but I don't know if we're ever going to completely get back to where we were.
Yeah, I don't think we ever will. I mean, I agree with you, Carol, that I think some businesses are, you know, have discovered through this, not that they wanted to, but they did, that, yeah, it is an advantage for a lot of folks to stay home, especially for those folks to be able to save money on the cost of commuting. And, you know, maybe like you said, when it comes to office space, maybe they discover that they don't need that office space anymore. And the world we live in, we are so connected with the internet that, you know, does this, you know, terrestrial building become passe for some people? You know, I mean, I think it was Twitter right off the bat said, you know what, everybody stay home and stay home, period. You know, we're not changing. We're not coming back to the office at all, no matter what happens. You know, and I think in some regards, you know, that could be a good thing and could be considered a bonus for the money saved. And also, you know, if you're environmentally conscious, well, that's less cars on the road for whatever amount of time it was that people are doing their commuting. So, you know, there's an advantage there. And, you know,
I think it's the situation, and part of me is like sad about certain things, and you know, and I'm not alone in that, and grieving certain aspects of life that we didn't have. But on the same hand, just what you said, Frankie Bear, there are advantages. People are spending more time with their family. They're getting back to nature, hiking. Like, people are just changing their ways, and there are elements of that that are a good thing. And the fact of the matter is, it is what it is. You got to make the best of what we got.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
you definitely have to do that. But if I can just add, like, play devil's advocate for a second, because I do agree that there might be some advantages, like people don't have to rent office space anymore. But that also comes with a disadvantage to the people who actually own that commercial space.
No, good
oh, yeah,
and then,
no doubt.
And then can't. And what are we going to do with that space? I don't want to see cities and areas, you know, become blight ridden with empty, boarded up buildings and that kind of thing. So we do need to get a little bit creative there. And plus, like, restaurants and gyms, you know, how long can you sustain, and you certainly won't have any newcomers in those fields if you can't operate at 100% capacity. So I worry about that. But I will say, in my field, in the legal field, I almost think I like virtually appearing in court a little bit better, from the standpoint of it saves time, which means it saves our clients money. But on the other hand, I don't think you can be as effective making arguments when somebody can, you know, mute their mic and be talking, whispering to somebody else while you're making your argument, so you don't know if you've got their attention. when we can't pick live juries right now, because now there's another moratorium on that. So people are waiting and waiting and waiting if they want to have a jury trial. So it's got that kind of thing. I don't know how we're going to resolve that anytime in the future, but you're, and look, you know, I miss my friends. Jeannie Kelly, one of our good friends, Jeannie Kelly, who we talk about on the show a lot, and Carol and I would get together in person and have a glass of wine and talk business all the time. I miss doing that kind of thing. And I think those things will resume, I hope. But the other stuff, I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
But Carol mentioned, you know, one of the things that this pandemic is causing is people to be more with their family and go out and enjoy nature and find new things like that. And as a Segu, we happen to... We have, this is a tiny bit of a departure from what we normally discuss, only because we're going to talk to an author coming up after the break. Her name is Sarah Schulting Crand, and she's got a very, very serious story that she's going to share with us that led her to write, I believe it is her first book, which is called Walk Through This, Harness the Healing Power of Nature and Travel the Road to Forgiveness. Because she went through some stuff, and this has nothing to do with the pandemic. This has to do with life. But I'm glad we're going to be talking to her, because a lot of people, I think, will be able to relate. They just haven't talked about it because it's very, very difficult to talk about what she's going to discuss with us. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk to motivational speaker and author Sarah Schulting Crand about her new book, Walk Through This.
And I just want to add before we cut out how proud I am of you, how far you've come, because when I first wrote Happy Bitch, I dedicated a whole chapter to forgiveness.
Chapter four.
And you stapled it shut.
Yep, I did.
Or so you said. But like a four letter word you were not going to utter. So this is interesting. I'm looking forward to talking with her.
All right, me as well. You've got Happy Hour here on 92.9 WBPM with Jonas Spilbor, Carol Pesci, and our guest, Sarah Schulting Crand, is on the way next. So please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back again to Happy Hour here on this Sunday morning with Jonas Spilbor and Carol Pesci and myself. And segment number two, as always, is when we get to one of our fantastic guests. So we had yet another one today. And Jonna will give you the intro to Sarah Schulting Crand.
Say that 10 times fast, Frankenberry.
No, I don't want to, because I'll trip on my face.
So as I mentioned before the break, we have a really special guest on today who's got a tremendous and very serious story that has led her to the other side. She has just recently written a book. I think that we'll talk to her about it, but I think this is her first book. It's called Walk Through This, Harness the Healing Power of Nature and Travel the Road to Forgiveness. And let me tell you a little bit about Sarah Schulting Crand. She's a professional life and leadership coach, a motivational speaker, and certified wilderness guide. I think she's our first certified wilderness guide. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
I think it's the first female certified wilderness guide. And I think that's total badass.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That is total badass. But there's more. She specializes in helping those who have suffered hardship or trauma to find, I have a hard time with this word, forgiveness and strength in their lives through guided wilderness retreats in locations such as the Grand Canyon and the Pacific Rim. I can't wait till we can travel again, guys. Her book, as I mentioned, is called Walk Through This, Harness the Healing Power of Nature and Travel the Road to Forgiveness. It was released last week. I would like to welcome to the show Sarah Schulting Crand. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. This is my pleasure.
So listen, I want to jump in because you have done something that I think is amazing, and you just recently released your book. Am I correct in that it's your first book?
It is. It is. Mm-hmm. This book has been in me since the age of 18.
I am
47.
I can see why it has, because what you do, which I think is very different and unique, in the introduction to your book, you just boom, you lay it all out there in the intro. Mm-hmm. And then the book continues. And I think you have such a wonderful message. Can we begin with how the book came about? Tell us the stories that got you to write the book, because they're very compelling.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am just going to dive right in, because that's what I do in my book as well. I was 17 years old when I was raped by somebody that I knew. And I grew up in a very small village in Wisconsin. The police refused to press charges. I had to get a restraining order on him. I had a village of, you know, community that didn't necessarily believe me, because the police didn't believe me. Here's the thing, though. I actually ended up getting pregnant as a result of this. Oh. And it was devastating, because, you know, you have all these people that you think should be there to protect and guide you, and they didn't. And my family was amazing. I actually chose to keep my son. It was my choice. My parents were awesome about that. They gave me that option because they knew, you know, this is your body and this is your life and you need to make this choice. And so they helped me through that decision. And I actually didn't only birth him, but I ended up keeping him. And I talk a lot about that in the book as well, about why I chose to do that, especially at 17. I ended up having not only the police that didn't believe me, but I ended up having the social services. They decided to adopt my son out behind my back. And I wrote about that in the book as well. Nobody knows that, but now they do. I didn't know about it. So I was sitting in the hospital bed and I had a nurse come in and say, "We're ready to take him to foster care." And I just looked at her and said, "I have no idea what you're talking about." And so she asked me, she said, "Do you want to make the phone call to the foster mom and tell her that you are keeping him, or do you want me to handle it myself?" And I said, "No, you let me do it." So at 17 years old, I learned the power to believe in myself, and I learned the power of my voice. Even if others were not listening or hearing me, it was, I'm listening to myself and I'm guiding myself through, again, with my parents' help and my brothers. Like, I have a tremendous family. Like, my family is awesome, but it really gave me that fortitude to realize the power of your own internal strength and the message that you carry and the values that you have within you. And so, yeah, I ended up bringing him home. I ended up going to school, went to college, and I met my to-be husband when I was at Madison. I went to UW-Madison and got a degree and, you know, was doing all the things and to make a better life for my son and I. And then I met him, fell deeply in love, and found out 17 years into our marriage that he had been betraying me with men for 14 of them. Yeah, I know. So I told you, I'm just going to dive right in, because that's what I do. That's what I do. And hopefully it's not, you know, hopefully people can take this in and understand that, you know, my hope, and the reason that I do dive in right away too, is because it is a powerful message. And the fact that, you know, yeah, all these things have happened to me, but they have not defined who I am today. And the reason I start with my age at 17 is because when I turned 40 and I found this out about my husband, I remember the day like it was, you know, yesterday. I remember the moment that he left that morning, you know, hugged me at the door and came home a whole different man. And how much that transformed my life, and also having to realize that I'm no longer that woman who I was, but I am so much stronger than I was that woman at the door. When he told me that, you know, he had been betraying me, it was Thanksgiving Eve, 2013, Thanksgiving Eve, 2013, that I found everything out. But when he ended up telling me, I remember looking at him and saying, "I want a divorce, but I will forgive you someday." And that was not my 40-year-old self speaking, by the way. That was my 17-year-old girl. My 40-year-old self was traumatized. Okay. My 40-year-old self was like, "I want to beat the out of you right now, because I can't believe you're doing this." But that was my 17-year-old self saying, "Wow, you know, you've been here before and you know what to do. You know how to walk through this." That's how the name of the book and the film and everything has come into fruition. You know how to, you've been here before, you know how to do this again. And so, you know, I've got you. So it was like my 17, 18-year-old self coming forward and saying, like, you know, all of what you've been through in the past. And that's actually where this book came from. The age of 18, I had this God-given hit, whatever you want to call it, that, you know, my struggles, again, don't define me, but just to keep moving forward, because people will hear my message someday and it will be in a book. I literally had that hit at the age of 18. Wow. Couldn't figure out why I never wrote it until all of a sudden sitting there now, and I'm like, oh, this makes sense. My story wasn't done. Come on. Can't write a book until you're ready to, right? Until your story is ready to really truly get out there. So that's how this book came into fruition.
Sarah, I want to challenge you for a moment, because I know that the book is about forgiveness, which is, you know, something Carol and I kind of joke, because Carol's also an author, and in her first book called Happy Bitch, she dedicates a chapter 4 to forgiveness, and Carol and I are very good friends, and I told her that I stapled that chapter shut and wouldn't read it when I read her book. Which is actually not even a joke. And so I want to get to how you get to forgiveness, but I do want to challenge you on this, because I think some people will find it remarkable. So you're in this marriage, and you describe it, you know, in the beginning part of your book, you had a wonderful marriage. Like, from the outside looking in, nobody would have known that there was anything wrong, right? Mm-hmm. But as the woman who is the wife and the mother in that relationship, was there really no clue, or was it more of a thing where, like, and I think we've all done this, where we are willfully blind to the things that aren't going to serve us. And if, you know, look, we're not getting the crap beat out of us by our partner, we think, well, it's okay, he's not beating me up, so let me just continue down this path. Was it anything like that, or were you truly in not knowing what was going on?
So I want to thank you for that question. And here's why. Because I start my book, this goes back to forgiveness, okay? Mm-hmm. I had to do a lot of self-forgiveness work on that, because I start in step 7, I start with self-forgiveness, forgiveness for others, forgiveness for the world. So I cannot step into forgiveness for others until I actually look at my own, and people have a hard time with this, responsibility for what actually has happened in my life, right? Mm-hmm. And through that process of responsibility, because the thing that people kept saying to me was, it was all David's fault. And I'm like, okay, time out. What about my learning in all of this? Don't strip that of me, because I had learning in this, and it was the God, and I write about this in there, the God-given moments where I was running, and all of a sudden I would have this just bolt of something go through me, like, something's not right. What's not right in my marriage? And when I would confront him or have the conversations, the tough conversations with him, it was always manipulated and gaslit and back to me of, no, everything's fine. What makes you ever in a million years think that I would ever do anything that would, you know, harm our marriage or harm our children? So the reason I say this is so important is because in the responsibility piece, I now take responsibility for all those times that I listened to him when my gut and my heart and my mind said otherwise.
Wow.
Which is why today I am spot freaking on with that. Let me tell you, and that's just it. Like, there's so much learning in that. So were there moments where I chose to listen to him or chose to listen to others instead of myself? Hell yeah. Because I valued our marriage so much. Right.
And you wanted to believe him. I've been so very similar in your shoes, and you wanted so much to believe him. And I love how you're sharing this story with us, Sarah, so much. And it's funny what you just said about your gut. And this is a conversation John and I have had multiple times, that as we get closer to 29, we check in more often. There's so much wisdom within us, Sarah, if we can slow down, hear it, and trust it. And you've learned that, and that's such a powerful benefit that has come to you from this horrific experience.
Oh yeah. And I teach my boys, we have 3 kids together now, so they're 29, 19, and 14, and this is what I teach my boys too, because I'm like, if there's anything that they can learn out of this, it's also that, let's just say, like, happens to you in life. Let's just put it out there, right? Like, you're gonna have things happen to you. Yep. And they can be opportunities of the deepest growth that you never had prior to.
Definitely. Yep.
Amen.
Absolutely. And do your children know, like, the whole story?
Oh yeah.
Sarah, do they know? Everything.
Well, so here's the thing. I mean, did I put the whole story in there? You can't. Like, it's an intro, right? And I wanted this book. Mm-hmm. The reason I wrote this book the way that I did, instead of a memoir or anything like that, was because I want people to start learning from their experiences in life, right? And so I wrote it so that if grandma, grandpa, brother, sister, son, daughter, mom, dad, whomever gets their hands on it, they can write in it. They can journal in it. They can, you know, do all of the things for their own deep learning and their growth, and then hand it on to the other people within their family or friends so that they can then learn from their experiences too. So everything is not in here. Okay. But, and my kids, I told my children from day one, like that was my whole thing with this was, I have now been betrayed so deeply. I never knew that betrayal could be like this. I never knew. I mean, and it wasn't only my husband, it was other people that knew too. My friends, I don't think family, well, there's a whole thing on that. My family didn't know. But I promised my boys, I will never lie to you. There is never, you ask me anything, I'm going to give you the straight up answer, age appropriate. And so, yeah, they pretty much, they, I mean, things still, you know, unfold with them. I still will go back and share things with them. But yeah, I am a firm believer in telling your kids everything that needs to be told so that they can learn from it.
And can trust you. They can trust what you're saying. Sarah, I have a question for you. So one of the most powerful things you learned is the power of forgiveness and even redefining forgiveness. And for the benefit of someone listening right now who has been deeply wounded, betrayed, and sadly, that's many. Mm-hmm. Where do you begin? Because you talk about, and I watched your TEDx talk, you talk about how you were carrying that within you, that anger and that betrayal, and that weakened you and was turning you into somebody not who you are. Yeah. Where do you begin? Someone's listening right now to start letting go of that. It doesn't make what happened go away, but how do you begin so it doesn't hold that negative power over you?
So I always tell everybody to heal anything, you have to feel everything.
Love that.
Mm-hmm. I know. Whoa. And so that right there, people go, no, what do I do? And I'm like, okay, well, then guess what? Welcome to what is going to be a toxic, you know, internal turmoil because, you know, that's actually why I did this book the way that I did as well, because it's 7 steps. The last step is to forgiveness. Right. And so every step we really dive deep into something new. If it's, you know, what is your intention for this? Who am I? The being and the doing, the setting boundaries, you know, there's so many things that getting to know yourself even more deeply through your values. What do you do when the work gets hard? Right. And so that's why I didn't just dive into forgiveness, because you have to know yourself that much more deeply. You have to do that hard work, take those first 6 steps before you can step into step 7, which is forgiveness. You know, and so what I always tell people is take this opportunity to be, which means don't feel like you have to do everything. You can't just jump to forgiveness before being with yourself. That means your emotions, your feelings, you know, learning how to set boundaries for other people, for yourself, but so that other people don't come in to your life and do the things like what you've had done to you, right? And so there, and to really get to know your values more, get to know who you are even more. But I'll tell you, this is why nature is so important. This is why I brought the nature piece in, because you cannot do all of that when you're sitting in 4 walls or if you're sitting simply in your mind. Forgiveness does not, you cannot mindset forgiveness, right? Forgiveness comes from the heart, which is why if we're staying in like our headspace or our mind space, if we're staying in 4 walls, we're never going to get there. You got to get your butt outside, connect to something so much larger than yourself, drop into your heart and allow yourself to feel. Just freaking feel.
Almost literally get grounded.
Yes, and, absolutely. 1,000%.
Get off the rumination loop. I can get stuck in a rumination loop real easy if I want to.
In my intro and preface, man, I talked about that. When people hear me, they think, oh my gosh, like how did she get there? Or, wow, she's so strong, or wow, she's so this. And that's why I also talked in there about the fact that I had a moment where I literally was like, I could take my life right now. You know, the PTSD was so intense. I never knew, like it breaks my own heart knowing that I went through that. Because if I went through that, there are so many other people going through that too. The rumination, where you just feel like life is just worthless, where you're just like, how the hell did I get here? And, you know, and it's remembering to take every step forward and really allowing yourself to go through this difficult situation that you're in, this difficult trauma that you're in, and understand too that, look, if I've gotten through this, y'all can get through this. like I was in a bad space.
No doubt about it. When I first discovered my ex's affair, I went to go speak for the first time to a counselor. We had like an EAP program where I work. Where, ironically enough, I was in HR and I was the one that instituted the program. Anyway, I was so proud of myself when I first went. And I was like, well, I'm doing a really good job keeping busy so that, you know, I don't feel down all the time. And she's like, yeah, you're going to have to slow down a little bit and let you, you're going to have to experience it to get through to the other side. She said, if you feel like you need to get on the couch and hold a pillow and cry, go do that. Just don't stay there all day. And that was a very, very, and I did. And because I think we have learned in this, positive thinking is wonderful. It's been taken to an extreme where we think we need to mask the truth of what we're feeling, that we're failing because we're crying or we're angry. And the fact of the matter is when we keep holding those down, they weaken us, they make us sick, and we are wiser and better off to give ourselves permission and space to experience that. I love that you say to heal anything, you have to feel everything. And for me, I forgave pretty early. And I even have an interesting story of the mistress reaching out to me and my forgiveness to her. But what I realized, Sarah, and this could be a pivotal moment for anybody who's holding on to it. When you, I think resentment is a choice. Mm-hmm. And I think when you hang on to that resentment, you are choosing to give power over you away to someone who likely doesn't deserve it. And it's a matter of recognizing, I'm not saying it's okay, it's fine what you did. That's not what that's about. It's about choosing to no longer let that control you and have power over you and claiming your power back.
Okay. Yes. 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 More of that. Yes. 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 Soul sister. Yes. Yeah.
You guys can't see me, but I'm eye rolling over here.
Come to the light side.
She always says something super smart, and our wonderful guests like you are always like, oh, Carol, you're so super smart, and then you guys can't see me. So then I eye roll my eyes, and now I'm staring at her bitch. That was a Freudian slip. I'm staring at her book, Happy Bitch, and I'm like, I'm still not going to unstaple chapter 4. I'm really sorry. It's not happening. No, I'm only kidding. You guys are both very smart. I want to write down that saying, in order to heal anything, you have to feel everything. I want that on a t-shirt, and I'm the one who's reticent to forgive anybody for anything, but I love that.
Probably going to be my next Instagram post, and I'll certainly give you credit for it. And by the way, Sarah, just so you know, a little bit of the inside scoop about Jonna, she has an inside out a-hole cup that if somebody really makes her angry, she puts her name on it, and she puts a hex on them that she hopes they get that.
It's not like a strong hex. So it's not a hex that they die. It's a hex that they get. There's a disease where your anus turns inside out. It's very painful, but it's healable. And if you cross me, your name goes on a sticky note, you go in the cup, and then I can release my anger for you. I think it works.
That's now, amazing.
Sarah, I got to tell you, it's been a long time since Jonna has actually explained with such explicit language what the inside out a-hole cup
is. Sorry.
And,
this is the show to do it.
I haven't missed it. Okay? I'm just giving you the heads up. This is why, Sarah, that I always stay on Jonna's good side.
You know, I'm glad that I could be that person that helps to bring it back up again.
Thank you
no
very much.
No pun intended.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. I believe in you, too.
Awesome.
This is really awesome stuff. And unfortunately, we got to wrap up. But there's so much more. We could go into this in so much more depth. Yes. I do want to encourage our listeners to, in addition to grabbing your book, which was just released last week, and again, it's called Walk Through This, Harness the Healing Power of Nature and Travel the Road to Forgiveness, Sarah Schulten-Krantz. But please also check out her TEDx talk. All you have to do is, you know, Google her name in TEDx and it comes up right away. I loved it. I loved every second of that. And also though, Sarah, before we let you go, people can connect with you, right, on social media and through your website, because you're also a leadership coach. So people can work with you. How can people connect with you to work with you, et cetera?
Yes, you can just through my website, sarahschultenkranz.com. My email, sarah@sarahschultenkranz.com. Instagram, same thing. Facebook, same thing. And you'll put my name under here at some point, right? Or something, because my name is really long. People have said, like, why don't you change your name? I'm like, why would I do that?
We'll definitely we'll post your name so people can. But again, it's Sarah Schultenkranz. And I bet you if people just Googled Sarah Kranz, K-R-A-N-Z, you'll come up too, thanks to the wonderful world of Google. Absolutely. It was amazing to talk to you.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to finish the book. And you said there might be talk of a movie in the future, which I would very much be looking forward to.
You're working on a documentary right now. It's in post-production. It's called Walk Through This, A Story of Starting Over. And we're going to start releasing more of the footage next week. And so it's getting in finalization of, finalized and everything, but it's a really powerful, powerful film with not only my story, it's my story, but then we also bring other women in, and we filmed in the Grand Canyon over Thanksgiving of last year, 6 years to the day that everything happened. There are no coincidences in life.
Wow.
So, really powerful. Yeah. So yeah, definitely.
I'm so sorry. One last quick question. Do you ever communicate with your ex-husband at all? I mean,
oh yeah, we went out for lunch last week.
You are walking the walk, sister. You are walking the walk.
Yeah, we had a great brunch the day before, 2 days before my book was released. I mean, listen, I have some very strict boundaries too, you know, so just understand that. So I definitely energetic and also physical boundaries. He's the father of my children, and he deserves a happy life as well. So, you know.
You're awesome.
Wow,
you are awesome. Thank you so much for talking with us today, Sarah. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yep, we do appreciate it as well here, Sarah. So that was Sarah Schultenkranz and her brand new book. And you can check her out online. Just like Jonna said, just do the Google. Do the Google and you will find her. And we are not done yet here with Happy Hour this morning. We still have segment number 3 on the way, so please stick with us as we will be right back.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM.
And welcome back to Happy Hour here one more time on this Sunday morning with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frank and Barry.
It was very, very nice to have Sarah Schultenkranz on. And boy, what a story. Holy cow.
So much wisdom and insight and is inspiring. Like, she's real and raw and honest. And yet she has a really beautiful energy about her. I mean, look at what she's gone through. And we had the ability to learn from her and then laugh. Like, we had a really good time with her. So inspirational.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I was surprised. You know, I'm not I guess you wouldn't call me a nature girl. Like, I don't hike. I do like to be outside, though. And we didn't talk about it too much with her, but in her book, she does talk about, you know, kind of communing nature with the ability to forgive and heal and how that worked for her and how it can work for everybody else. And that's, you know, I'm willing to give it a try at some point.
As long as you can bring a hairdryer.
That's right. I will never go camping ever. But I like being outside, just not in the woods where I might step on a snake or get eaten by a bear.
Right. But you can walk the rail trail, for instance.
Oh, yeah. I do that all the time.
Okay.
And that's a nice little jog. I like that. I like when you can go out and exercise and not worry about getting hit by a car. That, to me, is a good time.
That's always good.
Yeah, good point.
That is a good time. But she really had a powerful message, and and I really loved her energy. And I think, listen, Christmas is coming, and I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, just hawking other people's products, but I think if you bought her book and you bought Happy Bitch, you would be well on your way to enlightenment. And, you know, you guys have some parallels in your story, It's nice to get, when you read something like that, like when I read your book and with her book, it's nice when you can read something, say, oh, wow, I guess I'm not alone. Or, oh, wow, you know, I didn't think I would ever be able to get through this. But you can, and you know you can, because other people have. And if other people have, so can you. And if other people haven't, you can too, and you can lead the way. So it is possible. You just, you know, you got to try.
And the best part is, if you read Sarah's book and then you read Carol's book, you can move forward asking really intelligent questions and make Jonna roll her eyes.
That's always a good time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's actually funny you say that. And I know you're half joking, but one of the processes I talk about in my second book, Hello Beautiful, which is a happy picture, is about, hey, my ex had an affair. A lot of stuff went down, but here's what I learned and how I got myself happy again. Hello Beautiful is really more about building a better relationship with yourself and your experiences, like coming together and showing up whole and real and authentic. And there's a process in the book that I call my FAQ. And it's forgive and then ask new questions. You got to let go of that resentment. And then you got to start asking intelligent questions.
Oh, well, there you go. Jonna, eyes.
Rolling.
Okay.
You can't hear my eyes rolling.
I think I can, actually.
I thought I heard some squeaking.
No, and that is really smart. And, you know, I'm the one who gave the when she said, and I love the phrase, and I wasn't joking about that, in order to heal anything, you must feel everything.
Love it.
Because that's one of the hardest parts about self-actualization and growth, is really, you know, sitting in the stuff that makes you uncomfortable about you.
Amen.
You got to do it. Yep.
That's
you got to do it. It ain't easy, but, you know, nothing worth it is. So I think that's also a lesson that comes across in this book.
Good point.
As well. So she was great. But I think
that is time.
Are we wrapping up?
I think we can wrap up. So before we go, Jonna, do you have anything to expect from continuing to live in the basement for at least another month or so?
Well, I am thinking of doing a video about how uncomfortable it is here while my mother waits on me and brings me homemade pizza and cake, because, you know, who wants that? You know,
exactly.
Like that's a really hard, like, I feel like a prisoner, you know, with breakfast, lunch, and dinner homemade for me all the time. And, you know, and free wine, like, that sucks. I mean, you know, that's like I don't even know how I'm living. I'm practically a shell of my former self right now. But so I'm thinking of doing that sometime before I have to reluctantly move back into my house and fend for myself.
You know, I might just have to write new lyrics to Hard Knock Life just for you.
Yeah, but it's an interesting journey. So,
won't be long, Jonna, before you're back to drinking Coors and eating mustard and chips.
There you go.
Because that's the only thing in my refrigerator, my fancy refrigerator.
Well, all right, then. That'll wrap it up today. Jonna with Coors Light, mustard and chips, eventually. The joys of being in her own home again. And this has been Happy Hour with Jonna and with Carol and with myself. Thanks again to Sarah Schulten-Kranz for joining us today and telling us her powerful story and just telling us about herself. And maybe we learned something today. So we'll be back again next week. We do it every week here at 92.9 WBPM at 8 a.m. with Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and me. It is Happy Hour right here on 92.9 WBPM. Have a good week, and please, please make it a safe one if you can.
Guys, happy Thanksgiving. We won't be back until after Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you and to our audience and to you and yours.
You too.
Okie doke.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborg and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 92.9WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.